You're listening to Hockey Central Saturday with Nick Alberga and Rory Boylan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
And so the recap begins of a 13-game Saturday in the NHL following All-Star Weekend. The deadline rapidly approaching as well. It's Nick Alberga joined alongside Rory Boylan here on Hockey Central Saturday across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Follow along via Twitter at the Golden Muzzy at Rory Boylan. And things very out in the open, I would say, right now. That was what I really gathered in terms of the Western Conference right now. There's a lot of teams still involved, and it's more intriguing the fact that a lot of those teams are not considered to be good hockey clubs, but there's a lot of mediocrity right now in the conference, Rory.
The Vancouver Canucks are a playoff team today, Nick. I think that says it all, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
Colorado now is sitting on the outside looking in, so that's shocking. St. Louis just 3 points out. They get a little bit closer. And Edmonton's still hanging around despite another very Edmonton effort this afternoon, Saturday afternoon.
Like, the Ducks lost a billion games in a row, and somehow they're still, like, within 5 points reach of a playoff spot. Makes sense of that.
Yeah, they're falling out hard. And then at the same time, in the Eastern Conference, Philadelphia has won 7 games in a row, and they're still 7 points out of the playoffs. It's really hard to make up that ground, but the East seems to be a lot more set than the West for sure, and it might just finish that the 8 teams that are holding a playoff spot right now will get there, but it really looks like there's a lot of movement still to be determined in the Western Conference wild card playoff picture.
Whole lot of wackiness right now in the NHL. Let's not waste any time. Let's get to the highlights, Rory. We're going to start with the WTF moment of the night, we're going to call it, at MTS Place. The Winnipeg Jets hosting the Anaheim Ducks, and this one got ugly in a hurry. We're all excited, I think, to an extent about Corey Perry's return. Gruesome injury in training camp.
Yep.
Comes back. Didn't matter who they had in the lineup in this game. Just a very dominating, resounding performance by the Winnipeg Jets, who were up 6-0 after one period of play, and just a dominating performance overall against the Anaheim Ducks.
Long pass ahead. Caught. Russell to Kittle. It goes! They weren't sure if he was going to be good to go, but he certainly is. And Jack Roslovic gets the power play goal to make it 2-0. Back for Perreault. Up high in the slot, Roslovic scores! Roslovic's second of the night, and the Jets are flying high now. It's 5-0. Over to Trouba. Trouba handing it out for Little. In front, scores! Patrick Jack Roslovic! And here come the Caps!
Gotta love that, courtesy Sportsnet 360 and the dulcet tones of one John Bartlett. Been waiting a while for this. Jack Roslovic with his first career hat-trick in this game. And it was 6-0 for Winnipeg after one period of play en route to a 9-3 rout. Poor John Gibson. A very difficult outing. He did not see the end of this hockey game. 6-on-14. And then they clean up the mess after that. But what a performance, Rory, by the Winnipeg Jets in this game.
Yeah, and Jack Roslovic, he's got so much value to this team in that he can play center lower in the lineup. He can play wing higher in the lineup like he did tonight alongside Brian Little and Patrick Laine on that second line. And he's got a cheap contract, entry-level deal for this season and next, while Winnipeg is going to have to deal with some hefty new contracts this coming summer. The amazing thing to me from this game is that while Roslovic got 4 points, Little got 3 points, Laine somehow ends up without a goal and one secondary assist as his struggles continue.
It's unbelievable to me that the discrepancies in the different months this year. He really struggled in October, comes out with 18 in November. Like, here we go again. He's getting like 60 goals. Yeah. And then, what, he got four goals since that month?
Yep.
Really is tremendous, but there's so many different ways the Winnipeg Jets can beat you. 6 goals in the first period. It really was something
to watch. First period was just, this is how lopsided it was. The Jets outshot the Ducks 14-4. They outshot them in the slot 9-2. They outshot them in the inner slot right out in front of the net 8-1. And their completed offensive zone passes were 61-18 in favor of Winnipeg. It was just a slaughter in that period.
Totally outclassed, so no doubt about that. So Winnipeg wins at 9-3 against the Ducks. Could only wonder if nothing to come of the Anaheim Ducks fiasco and situation. And Corey Perry back, but it seems to be something off with Anaheim this season. I know they always seem to be a staple of making the Stanley Cup playoffs, but I don't have that belief in this team right now.
No, I mean, they have been this bad all year. Ryan Getzlaf, in the couple weeks before the All-Star break, was in the media clearly frustrated. Like, he's not used to his teams in the NHL being this bad. They've always been pretty good teams, and there's just something going on here this year. Everything is breaking down. You know, you get the sense that some big changes are coming, if not by the deadline, then in the offseason to give this team a different look. I don't know if Randy Carlyle is going to start next October as the head coach of this team anymore, if his time there has kind of run its course. But you look at the team, and they still seem to have some pieces. I wonder if they trade Jacob Silverberg at the deadline. He's a pending UFA, whether or not they can get a deal done with him. Corey Perry coming back, plays 16 minutes and 29 seconds, gets four shots on goal, doesn't get anything else on the board. The defense is broken down. It's just a mystery what's going on with the Ducks this year.
Too many questions for my liking. We roll on to Scotiabank Arena, the Toronto Maple Leafs. Jake Muzzin, his home debut in this one against the Pittsburgh Penguins. The road debuts, I guess we can say, for Nick Bjugstad and Jared McCann, among others. Matt Murray, the call in this game, by the way, against Garrett Sparks, a battle of two teams on back-to-backs in this game, and quite the start for the Pittsburgh Penguins in this one. Just 10-01 in on the power play. Great shot once again from Sidney Crosby, from Chris Letang, and suddenly a 1-0 lead for Pittsburgh. Another sluggish-type start for the Maple Leafs, who were, for the most part, flying in the first 10 minutes, but it was more about the execution, I would say, was spot on for Pittsburgh early on in this game. So Sidney Crosby is 23rd. Here's how it sounded.
Letang off the draw, waits for the setup. Passes to Sid. The one-timer scores! It's back. Sidney Crosby in a building where he always seems to score. Gives the Penguins a 1-0 lead with a power play goal.
Jim Houston, the call on CBC. So that was the 23rd there on the PP again from Letang. Then shortly after that, one of the best names, I think, right now in hockey, Teddy Bluger, not to be confused with Freddy Krueger. his second from Garrett Wilson, the local product, and Ollie Matta. And surprisingly at that, Pittsburgh a 2-0 lead. Maybe not indicative of the way this game was going, but again, execution, the name of the game early on. But full credit to the Maple Leafs. They would keep chipping away, and they would keep going. And lucky for them, they have a lot of talent. And at 17:25, one of their superstars gets the job done.
Gardner got it. Long shot from the blue line. Stop, they score on the rebound. Austin Matthews. Big goal for Toronto to get back to within a goal at 2-1 as Austin Matthews scores again.
Some unfortunate rebound control right there for Matt Murray, right on the tape of the one guy you probably don't want it to be on his stick. Austin Matthews cleans up the mess. His 23rd from Dermott and Gardner. 2-1. Pens after 20 in the second. The Leafs to take over. A shot that had eyes from Travis Dermott, his fourth from Gardner and Marlowe. And then Zach Hyman, the eventual game winner in this one, is ninth from Riley and Marner. So a really, really strong second half to this game. I think a lot does for the confidence of Garrett Sparks. 28 saves, the Leafs out shooting Pittsburgh 33-30 in this one goal victory, 3-2 the final. What'd you make of this one, Roy?
Well, a big win for the Leafs. Both teams playing on the back-to-back here. The Leafs with their backup. No Evgeny Malkin for the Pittsburgh Penguins, so newly acquired Nick Bjugstad is in his spot as a second line center. So I think a situation, even though that the Leafs had their backup in, pretty favorable for them in this game, and they needed to have a strong showing. I think still that power play, 9.1% since January 1st, goes 0-2 tonight, went 0-5 last night on Friday. It's just like, what is going on with that? It was outstanding at the start of the season, and it couldn't have sustained that level. But it's now near the bottom of the league for a month or more.
It reminds me of the Anaheim power play a couple years ago, where everybody's like, there's so much talent on this roster, and they could not do anything. And we're headed, because in the preseason, so Tavares comes over, everybody's like, they're going to have an unprecedented power play and a historical
like
power play. And it started that
yep.
way. But full credit to the opponents. I don't know if it's video or something that teams have owned in on, but they've completely shut Toronto down in terms of their seam passes. Like, it's been night and day from the first month of the season.
Yeah, so, they were, I think, the first or maybe the second best power play right out of the gate for a while. And then in early December, that's when it really just started to take a huge downturn. And they're in...
Who returned in early December?
They're in the 20s somewhere.
Is there a theme player with who returned in early December? Can you put your finger on that?
What, are you putting all of this on William Nylander?
Completely everything on William Nylander. The Leafs win 3-2 against Pittsburgh. We roll on to one of the more important games of the 13-game docket on Saturday. Again, it's Nick Elberger, Rory Boylan, the recap hour here on Hockey Central Saturday on the Sportsnet Radio Network. The Pepsi Center in Denver, it's Colorado against Vancouver. And stunningly enough, this really wasn't a good hockey game to watch. Vancouver, really, again, another impressive performance. They were up 2-0 after 20 in this one.
Here come the Canucks with a chance for a 2-on-1. Antoine Roussel moving in, centers for 10 and scores! Jake for 10 and ends his goal drought as he opens the scoring a minute 40 in to make it 1-0 Vancouver. To get up on the rush defense, like to activate, and Besser scores off the crossbar and in, and the Canucks have a 2-0 lead. J.T. Compers argued he didn't like the way the puck was dropped, but he's not going to win that one. The Canucks double their lead.
Petty, if you ask me. John Shorthouse, Louis DeBrus there, the call on Sportsnet and CBC. A 2-0 lead for the Canucks after 20. Jake Virtanen is 12th. Brock Besser with a snipe there is 17th off Pedersen in the draw. 2-0 after 20 in the second. Roussel makes it a 3-0 game. Then Matt Calvert, a weird tip, eludes Jacob Markstrom, the only time Colorado would solve him in this game. His 8th. Tyler Motwood scores 7th. And Nikolai Goldobin on a one-timer on the power play in the 3rd rounded out the scoring. A 5-1 win for the Vancouver Canucks. How about that? They go into Colorado behind 34 saves from Jacob Markstrom, Roy.
And just look at the guys who score in this game for Vancouver. Virtanen, Besser you expect. Roussel, Tyler Mott, Nikolai Goldobin, who gets back into the lineup after being scratched for the last four or five. They are getting the depth scoring that is the Achilles heel of the Colorado Avalanche. And Colorado started this game by splitting up their top line, putting Nathan MacKinnon as the second line center. It didn't last long. They fell behind. They forced them back together. And then those guys just, I mean, they really couldn't get anything going here against the Vancouver Canucks. I think they deserve a lot of kudos for the effort they put into this game on the road in Colorado, even though they were outshot 35-26, and a good game for Jacob Markstrom. And they just seemed to be buzzing around the net. It wasn't an exciting game. Like, you know, Elias Pettersson wasn't out there doing tons of things that were dazzling.
But
they got the job done.
Yeah, very, very consistent professional effort, I would say, from Vancouver, really taking on the DNA of their head coach. And so one thing that's growing in that locker right now with confidence, every growing victory, more and more confidence. Again, very reminiscent of what New Jersey put forth last season. I'd love to see Jim Benning reward his team. And as for Colorado, you wake up on Sunday on the outside looking in, as you alluded to, they have to jump the market. Like, they have to act quickly, in my opinion, no?
Yeah, you've won 3 of your last 11 games. The offense is dried up, and it's got to be a score. If it can be a center, it's got to be a center that you go in and get. And because you hold Ottawa's first-round pick, even though you're a bubble team in the playoffs, you've got to feel that freedom to be able to shop your own first-round pick. It might come back to bite you, but I think that's the risk this team has to take. They look good enough when they're going that they could do some damage or be a tough out in the first round at least. It's just you got to find that right player, not really overpay for. But you're right. You got to jump the market right now.
You need a goalie and a scorer. Yep. Imagine the thoughts of acquiring two rentals in Panarin and Bobrovsky. That's just me on the outside of the box thinking. I don't think it's likely. And you're going to probably have to give up the Ottawa pick. But that'd be quite the ad. And I think
you can't do that.
It depends on how Colorado views their team, and I think you look at that conference, that division alone, it's going to be difficult for that team, no doubt. We'll roll on to the Bell Center matinee affair, the first of two on this weekend for the Montreal Canadiens, both on home ice. They'll host Edmonton coming up on Sunday afternoon. This time, it's New Jersey, so the correlation, of course, with Adam Larson and Taylor Hall. Taylor Hall, by the way, won't be traded by the deadline for the New Jersey Devils. And they put forth a really solid effort in this game. We saw the return of Mackenzie Blackwood, who spent about a week in an All-Star game in the American Hockey League. I think he has shown that he's ready. I'm still curious to see Corey Schneider when he's able to return from this conditioning stint, what they do. Keith Kincaid's a UFA, so maybe he's the likeliest to go. But anyways, a good start for the Canadians on home ice in this game. It's Jesperi Kotkaniemi, a blast from the slot, his seventh from Lehkonen, and Jordy Benn. And just like that, a 1-0 Montreal lead, 5:22 in. Devils would respond in the first frame on the power play. Third of the season for Will Butcher, made it 1-1 after 20. More back and forth into the second period, where Philippe Deneau would score his ninth from Petrie and Domi. So Montreal up 2-1 after 40. Should note, too, Antti Niemi, the start in this game, with Carey Price suspended automatically for not going to All-Star weekend. He wasn't going to play anyways, by the way. It actually worked out perfectly for Montreal on the back-to-back. Price back in action, the Alberta boy, against the Edmonton Oilers coming up. But it was 2-1 Montreal after 40 in the third. Again, it's been a very disappointing season, I would say, for New Jersey in terms of bouncing back after making the Stanley Cup playoffs last year. But a bright spot here in the second half has been, this sophomore forward.
Out of the box is Coleman. Devils have killed it off as Niemi makes a save. Rooney, centering try. Loose puck in front. Comes to Hischier. He scores! Nico Hischier wearing the A. Ties the game with 8.5 to go.
And good point there by Steve Cangelosi on MSG Plus. Nico Hischier in the effect of all the injury concerns right now with New Jersey wearing the A for the first time. And he took it to heart, so to speak. His 15th from Rooney there at 11:26 forces OT in this game. And just take wild guess who scored the win.
Puck comes loose and it's taken back by Mueller. Here's Mirko. He'll retreat to center.
What a save by Niemi and a pass by Nico Hischier.
Nico walking in. Shooting. Stop! Nico Hischier on the rush, ends it in overtime, his second overtime goal of the year, and the Devils win it in Montreal.
And so the Habs pick up a point, but not two of them at that, so the Maple Leafs continue to hold on to the second in that division, the Boston Bruins in that conversation. Montreal still getting points left and right, but Nico Hischier, nice finish there, two goals in this game, number 16 for Mueller, and a 3-2 win. Again, a returning Mackenzie Blackwood, 37 saves, and something to watch for what happens in New Jersey's crease going to the deadline.
Yeah, I mean, he's really making a case that he could be the guy going forward. Schneider in the hip injuries, it's hard to see him getting back. When he did play this year, he wasn't himself. He wasn't his old self. Like you said, Kincaid is a free agent, so there's some flexibility to maybe move on from him. And you can save some money by having, you don't want to spend too much money on goalies anymore, I don't think. And having a goalie as cheap as Blackwood would be good. But I think Hischier's season is, 16 goals now. He's not getting a lot of attention because his team isn't doing much, but it's because of what he's doing. And because they can still play with a little buzz around the net, they can give you a little bit of speed. They're going to be a really good spoiler team down the stretch. Yep. They're going to end up with another high draft pick this year. Whether that's Hughes or Kako or somebody a little bit more further down than that, we'll see after the lottery. But, still a team tracking to a better, brighter future. I imagine if they trade Taylor Hall in the offseason, next year he'll be going into his UFA season. If they don't think they can sign him, I mean, he might be able to bring back a pretty good haul of futures, too.
Uh-huh.
And again,
pun intended.
Yeah. if you consider what they did last year, maybe they're a bounce back potential team next season when they get back. But I think that look at all the young talent on this team in net, out front, everywhere. They're building towards something still further down the line.
You were so coy with your assessment. We're going to roll on to the game I'm sure you had circle the entire day. It's the Ottawa Senators hosting the Detroit Red Wings, a 2-0 final. Here's one of the goals in this one for the Red Wings.
Here they come again. Here's a chance for Helm. Backhand scores. Garrett Helm. And the Red Wings strike quickly back to back.
Let's just say we're more preoccupied with what's happening off the ice in Ottawa than the team on the ice, because, again, they're headed for misery without their first-round pick. City TV there, and Dave Randorf, the call. Danny DeKeyser is third. Darren Helm, his fourth, and a 2-0 win for Detroit. Jonathan Bernier, 35-save shutout in that one. Anything else to add on that one, Rory?
Ottawa is dead last in the NHL and don't have their own
first-round
pick.
Stunner! What a shocker that is.
Man,
how does Pierre Dorion still have a job?
If they can't keep Mark Stone and Matt Duchene, he might not anymore after that point.
I love this team. So they've got a maximum they'll go on a contract with Stone and Duchene. So the moment you hear that, you're going to go above that, right? If you're the players, you're not a dump. Like,
right.
You know? Like,
yes. Yeah.
I was going to say something else there.
Yeah. you got yourself.
You're not smart, if that makes sense. I think you want to hit the jackpot in terms of free agency. They're going to try to do so, but I said this a month ago on the show. I don't know if you remember. My gut seems to tell me that they've had a long time, even before they were legally able to do on January 1st, to talk to these guys. But you're just wasting money on mimosa after mimosa. I don't know what you drink in these meetings, but you're setting up future meetings. Why don't you just talk about the current contract? It leads me to believe that something's up and these guys, you know, the price really has to be right to come back to Ottawa.
I was always shocked if Duchesne was going to come back. Stone, that door always seemed to be open. But
that had to
catch everybody else is leaving and you're, it's not looking good.
Just slap
and this
in
is
the
your
face.
Chance to really cash in big in your prime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just becomes, why would you choose Ottawa unless there's some personal attachment? But there would be a ton of contending suitors for Stone if he hits that market. And I think Ottawa, the best course of action, look, you're going nowhere. You don't have your first round pick. The best course of action is to get what you can for these guys because they will bring back a haul for you in futures.
And I think to add too, like I really feel when we talk about Mark Stone, I think it really was a slap in the face that they couldn't come to an agreement on a long-term deal. He's Mark Stone. I mean, the guy's been the model of offensive consistency and they were only able to meet
your
on a one-year
captain.
Contract. Like it's...
Yep.
It's a gong show, and it continues to be that way in Ottawa until some things change. It's going to be continuing that way because, again, I just had that feeling that we're likely headed down a route where both these guys are hitting the trade market, and they're both going to leave Ottawa. And these are job on the line tape moves. You would have to say at this point for Pierre Dorion, like he better hit on these two trades if he does have to.
Yeah. So on Panarin in Columbus, there were reports that the Blue Jackets wouldn't let any potential trading team talk contract with him.
Okay.
But I think it's vitally important for Ottawa if they're going to trade these guys, especially Stone. They have to keep that option open for anybody that wants to trade because that's the only way you're going to get back the absolute maximum for them. If you're selling them as rentals, you're really only hurting yourself at that point.
Yeah, if you think Columbus is a soap opera, just keep it locked to the old situation in Ottawa. That things are percolating, my favorite word, and it's only going to get more interesting as we get closer to the deadline. Final stop here in segment one of the show. Another circus, the Edmonton Oilers visiting the Philadelphia Flyers. And yeah, I know. We need the sound effect. Carter Hart came to play against his hometown team. 40 saves in this game. He's been a remarkable story. Again, the other story in this game, the Oilers finding another way to lose behind another marvelous performance from Connor McDavid, who scored number 30 of the year in this loss.
But around the board for Kara. Back to McDavid. McDavid. Cassian gave him the puck right back in. Let's it go, and he scores. What a goal by Connor McDavid. And the Oilers have taken the first lead for them this afternoon.
Drew Menda and Kevin Quinn, you heard there the call on Sportsnet, an afternoon matinee affair. Gotta love those one. And stunning analysis, by the way, behind the scenes from producer extraordinaire and Minnesota Wild fan Hayden Mathewson, saying Connor McDavid, he's fast. I like that breakdown quite a bit. You're not incorrect in that assessment, Hayden. The 30th on the air from Cassian.
Give this man a raise.
And Kara, we should. Raises across the board. No, let's not go crazy. 2-1 for Edmonton after 20 in the second. In fact, they made it 3-1. Adam Larson is second, and Claude Giroux pipes back for Philly on the power play. The only foreshadowing, I think, of things to come in this game. Giroux would score 16 in the PP, so... It was the Oilers leading 3-2 after 40 in the third. Early on, shorthanded, Zach Cassian is sixth, a 4-2 game. But again, it is the Oilers, and it's Cam Talbot playing in this game, so anything's possible. Team's horrendous defensively. So here comes Philadelphia. Travis Konecny is 14th in the PP from Lindblom and Couturier. Then 11:02, yes, they complete the comeback again. Wayne Simmons, contract year, his 16th of the PP from Giroux and Voracek. OT needed. And the Oilers didn't win this hockey game.
Patrick overskates. An opportunity now. Sinheim lets it go. He put it over top of the net. Out in front. Patrick scores. Nolan Patrick wins it in overtime. He gets his 10th goal of the season. And the Philadelphia Flyers remain red hot. They have won 7 straight games, 5 of them here at the Wells Fargo Center. And the rookie, Carter Hart, has got his 9th victory of the year.
My highlight of that game was not that goal, but Gene Principe interviewing Gritty somehow. A mascot who doesn't say any words, but Gino still knocked it out of the park. Nolan Patrick, again, watching this game, you're like, Edmonton's going to blow this. Like, it's just so ordained at this point, in my opinion, watching Oilers hockey. What a train wreck. And they still got to pay Koskinen for three more years, but it was Talbot taking it on the chin in this one. Nolan Patrick in the slot had all the time in the world, ate a pizza, ate a cheesesteak, two of them actually, before scoring that goal. His 10th from Van Riemsdyk. And Sanheim, who has really stepped up, has Travis Sanheim. He'll be in my Sportsnet musings coming up on Sunday. 3 points in four games since Shane Gostisbehere went down with his lower body injury. 7 wins in a row now for Philadelphia. Ho-hum, another losing skid for Edmonton, 4 in a row, but Philly is my sidebar story here. Carter Hart, my goodness. It's a lot of pressure on a young kid, but I think he's performed and exceeded expectations in my book so far.
6 wins in a row for him now. The longest winning streak for a goalie that has yet to turn 21 in NHL history is 8 by Jocelyn Thibault in 1995, and Hart doesn't turn 21 until August, so he's got the rest of the season for that. He's got a 930-plus save percentage. He's been absolutely outstanding. The difference in this game, special teams and boneheaded mistakes by the Edmonton Oilers.
Never heard of that. No.
Flyers, power play, 4-for-5. Oilers go 0-for-3, but it was the 2 penalties by the muscle for the Oilers. Zach Cassian and Milan Lucic. They are so obsessed with it. These guys took a couple of high-sticking penalties in that third period. I thought Cassian's especially was brutal. And they led to 2 power play goals for the Philadelphia Flyers brought them to within 1 goal and then tied it. So that was the difference in this game. And I mean, that's Edmonton. They're blowing it. They're just making bad mistakes. Their power play disappears when they need it most. And this is a game they should win. This is a team that should be making the playoffs. And they set themselves up to lose so consistently.
Yeah, the only person smiling more than Gino Principe in Edmonton these days is, of course, Mikko Koskinen, who is laughing straight to the bank each and every day.
It's just an unbelievable contract. it makes no sense.
I need the break to think about life. We're going to hit it now. Minnesota and Chicago's next up, then Tampa and the Rangers. The New York Islanders, man, oh, man, that team is humming right along right now. They played host to the LA Kings. The Columbus Blue Jackets, you want to talk about percolation and reeling. That team has all of the above. Any adjective you want to use right now. 5 regulation losses in a row. This one against the suddenly surging St. Louis Blues and Vlad Tarasenko, which I'm sure we'll talk about in mere moments. Yep. Then your Florida Panthers were also in action. The debuts of Derek Brassard and Riley Shane in that one. Panthers hosting the suddenly slumping Vegas Golden Knights. Dallas and Nashville hooking up at Bridgestone. Maybe a precursor of things to come in next year's Winter Classic. And then we'll wrap up in San Jose. No Carlson, no problem against the streaking Arizona Coyotes. San Jose had a big night from Brent Burns, who could be en route to a Norris Trophy, if you know what I'm saying. It's Nick Alberga joined alongside Rory Boylan, Hockey Central Saturday across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Sportsnet 590, the fan. This is Hockey Central Saturday on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
And so the recap continues of a 13-game first Saturday in February of the NHL season here. Nick Alberga joined alongside Rory Boylan on Hockey Central Saturday across the Sportsnet Radio Network at the Gold Muzzy at Rory Boylan. Our next stop, producer extraordinaire, is fired up Hayden Mathieson. I'm talking about his Minnesota Wild at home to Chicago in suddenly a pivotal matchup for both teams. You mean to tell me Chicago's still involved?
Somehow they're hanging around.
Yeah, they're 72 outdoor games. They don't win in outdoor games. They continue to play in them. Reasons unknown. Patrick Kane is quietly on fire. We'll get to him in mere moments, but it was a good start for Hayden's Wild. Wild, plural, is Wild, not Wilds. Jason Zucker is 14th.
I'm going to start calling them the Minnesota Wilds.
That'd be good. Zucker's 14th of the PP from Granlund and Ryan Suter. Cue the excitement here at our studios, but that was dwindled away in the second period because Alex DeBrincat responds a quiet 26 for him. Then Eric Gustafson having himself a year. A bit of foreshadowing here, by the way. His 9th from Dominic Cahoon and Dylan Strome. 2-1 Hawks after 40 in the third. Here come the Wild right back. Mikko Koivu is 8th from Parisi and Spurgeon at 8-11. But shortly after, in the final 5 minutes, the Hawks on the power play. Great pass from Patrick Kane. The slap pass to Jonathan Toews is 23rd on the PP from Kane and DeBrincat, 15-25. However, that was short-lived. You won't believe who scored this goal for the Wild.
Centering pass here.
Chris Cuthbert, the call there on Fox, or excuse me, on NBC Sports, and Victor Rask, just his first goal. Meanwhile, Niederreiter has more than just one goal.
5-5.
Yes, not to bring it up to Hayden. Hello. Victor Rask, his second, a big one of that from Greenway and Marcus Foligno, sets up OT, a late ill-advised penalty from a man who made $98 million over a 13-year contract, Ryan Suter. Hawks on the PP and OT.
They'll regroup, same. Seven skaters on the ice with under a half minute left in the Suter penalty. Gustafson scores! It's a Chicago game winner for Eric Gustafson!
They have life, do the Blackhawks. Eric Gustafson, second of the game, 10th on the PP from DeBrincat and Toews. They take it in Minnesota, 4-3 the final. My guy, Colin Delia, 28 saves in this one for a fourth consecutive win for Chicago. Minnesota still 4-2-1 over the last seven games with a crucial 2 points for the Hawks, who feel they also still have life, Rory.
Yeah, so Chicago is still second last in the Western Conference, but 5 points out of a playoff spot. It's just a lot of teams to leapfrog over, right? So
it could happen.
It's probably still a long shot, but it could possibly happen. reports this week that they might ask Duncan Keith to waive his no trade tonight, that they might do the same for Brent Seabrook. I don't know if either would be willing to do that, but it's interesting that that could be on the table. But as you're considering that, Eric Gustafson continues to get onto the radar here. A couple of goals tonight, including the overtime winner that was on the power play. And if you needed any more proof that he is now the number one power play defenseman on this team, look at this. Duncan Keith plays 1 minute and 16 seconds on the power play. Eric Gustafson played 22 minutes in total, 7 minutes and 27 seconds on the power play.
Wow, that's incredible stuff right there. And since that little minor tweak, the Hawks have... I've been a way better hockey team. Jeremy Calton, for a guy who took a lot of grief early on, has really turned this team in the right direction. So we'll monitor Chicago leading up until the deadline. Next up, we head off to the Garden, the New York Rangers against the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think at this point, these two teams are like inter-squad teams of each other, given all the transactions, namely the big one last year with McDonough and JT Miller in the fold.
But the Rangers are hoping Tampa wins the Stanley Cup.
They do. They got
the get a first-round pick from that trade.
It's a good point. And at this point, you have to put pretty decent money on that happening, by the way. Tampa is far and beyond the best team in hockey statistically on paper. 11 losses. Like, it's regulation losses, 13 in total. And again, a good start. Another professional effort from them. Not stunning. Yanni Gord scores his 13th through McDonough and Matthew Joseph. 1-0 after 20. More of the same in the second. There has been whispers that Tampa would like a bit of an upgrade or some more veteran leadership on the back end. Maybe it's a Cody Ceci they bring in. But Eric Chernak has had a come-from-nowhere type season. We've seen a lot of these the last couple of years.
Callahan with the puck. Now Chernak with a shot. He scores. 2-0 Tampa Bay for Chernak, his first NHL goal.
There's Kenny Albert, the call on NBC. Eric Chernak with his first NHL goal from Ryan Callahan and Cedric Paquette, 2-0. And then shortly after that, this was the eventual game winner in this one at 8:33.
Crossing with Stamkos. Drops it off for Hedman. Now Stamkos moves in and scores. Steven Stamkos with his 28th of the season, 3-0 Tampa Bay.
Louis Domingue, by the way, the call in this game. You build up a 3-0 lead when you're Tampa, you're going to win. That's exactly what happened. Credit to the Rangers. They have been playing better as of late again, but they came up too little too late. Zuccarello was 9th. Kevin Hayes is 11th. Two guys, ironically enough, who could be on the move between now and the deadline. So Tampa takes care of business. They have 80 points, Rory. They're 39-11-2 on the season.
And they're going to add at the trade deadline. It's scary. Who knows what it's going to be? Are they going to make a big thing? Are they going to do a small tinker to the back end of their defense? We'll see, but I think all options are on the table. Of note, Braden Point missed this game tonight with a lower body injury. He's day-to-day. But again, you just get a little flash here on the Rangers side from Zuccarello and Hayes. Zuccarello, a winger who's really coming on in the last couple of weeks. Hayes, who's having the best season of his career and is a nice little playmaking center, I think is going to be a good third liner for some contending team that picks him up. Maybe he's a second line guy if a Colorado or somebody like that that has no depth at all targets him. But there's a lot to like in what you can pick up for the Rangers, and I don't think that they're going to cost as much as some of these other names that are available.
You never know. It all depends on how Jeff Gordon, sure, the general manager, plays the market right now.
Yes.
And I think he's got a couple of valuable assets, in my opinion. And I think if you drive up the market and these guys are playing excellent right now, sky's the limit on the potential value there. We'll stay in that area. We'll head off to Uniondale and the New York Islanders. Man, oh man, this story continues to get better and better. The Islanders at home to the LA Kings, and again, they get the job done, and now we're really starting to think, are they going to win the Metropolitan Division after losing John Tavares, who goes to the Maple Leafs? That kid that won the Calder, Matthew Barzal, might be in the conversation at the end of this season for the Hart Trophy, at least in the top 10. He was full value in this game again.
I really want, at this point, Toronto to fall in the wild card.
Yeah. Revenge series of history in that one, a potential, but still far away from that. Casey Cizikas kicks off the scoring, his 12th from Boychuk and Martin. Anze Kopitar has been so consistent in the last couple months after a putrid start, scores his 15th from Iafallo and Brown. So it's 1-1 after 20 in the third period. Ilya Kovalchuk goes off his foot.
Matt, there he is.
Weren't you really high on Kovalchuk this year?
I was interested to see. They needed scoring, and it seemed like that might be a potential fit. And it's blown up in my face.
Played in a permanent all-star game in the KHL.
He's been terrible.
Well, I know. His 10th from Brown and Kopitar off his leg, so not even using his stick. A 2-1 game, but again, it is the LA Kings. They've just been a train wreck this season, so it continued in this game, and it was spearheaded by that kid that won the Calder.
Bailey slides it to Pulock straight away. Back door. Barzal. He scores. Matt Barzal ties it immediately.
Pretty incredible stuff right there. Brendan Burke, the call on MSG. Matthew Barzal. Talk about response. Like 30 seconds later, his 15th from Pulock and Bailey. The momentum all in the favor of the Islanders, and they would roll on from there, including the eventual game winner from Michael Del Colo, who's maybe making a name for himself a bit in the NHL right now.
Ryan Pulock has to reach forward. A wrist shot. They score! Michael Del Colo! The perfect deflection! And the Islanders in front here in the final minutes.
I hate the fact that Ryan Pulock continues to tease fantasy owners. He had three helpers in this game, but Michael Del Colo is second there from Pulock and Komarov. Then Brock Nelson, the empty netter, is 17th from Pulock and Clutterbuck. And LA comes from behind, takes care of business, or excuse me, the Islanders do. 4-2 the final against the LA Kings in this game. And again, it just continues to be a marveling story. The one thing to note, the Islanders, Rory, 8-0-0 in back-to-back games.
Wow.
On the second half, they scored three unanswered here and extend their point streak to 8 games. They're legitimate. And the one thing that proved they were legitimate was that 1-0 game against Tampa, in my opinion, the other night. The fact that now, and this was on the back-to-back, you play Tampa, and you can have a letdown when you play a team like LA. They still came to play. And the fact that they were 1-1-1 against Tampa had shown me a lot. And I've seen enough from this Islanders team to say they're legit, and they're going to be a tough out in the playoffs.
Yeah, and since December 15th, when they started a short road trip that they did well on, they're the best team in the NHL.
Yeah.
That's incredible. And, I think culture is kind of a thing that gets talked about, and you don't really know what it means.
Buzz.
And sometimes it doesn't mean anything, but in this case, with Barry Trotz and Lou Lamoriello coming in, but especially the effect that Trotz has had ice level and the way that they prepare, it really proves that there's something to that if you do it right. And that how they've turned around from the worst defensive team in the league last year to one that is one of the best. Their goaltenders, both of them, a team save percentage is the best in the league by a pretty wide margin at this point. I mean, you don't just turn that around without making any massive changes on your roster. The only massive change they made was losing John Tavares. The reason for that is this culture, this level of responsibility that has been instilled in this roster from top to bottom. And we had Arthur Staple on the Tape to Tape podcast this week, and he was mentioning that idea that nobody is above anybody else on this team anymore. Everybody's in it together. Everybody's on the same plane. And when that's the case, everybody's buying in. It's easy to buy into something like that and work as a collective. And I think that is so obvious with how this team has completely flipped the script.
Yeah, it really is unbelievable. And it speaks to Lou Lamoriello. If even he had to solidify his legacy even more, the fact that he goes to a team, they lose their franchise centerpiece and they get better. It makes no sense, but the guy just oozes confidence. And the same goes for his team. The Trotz hiring was great. The Mitch Korn hiring as well. And I'm so excited to see what happens to the Islanders later on this season, namely February 28th, 3 days after the NHL trade deadline, where Pajama Boy John Tavares makes his return and will square off again with that kid that won the Calder.
Love it.
At the Coliseum, which is going to be a ruckus environment. And again, the question still has to rise where they're going to play their playoff games if they get to that point. I know they'd love to do it at the Coliseum, but there are no suites there, apparently. So that could be tough in terms of a sell for the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll roll on. Meantime, the Columbus Blue Jackets, things percolating negatively there. Certainly riding a four-game losing streak, all in regulation into this matchup against the surging St. Louis Blues. Jordan Binnington taking on Jonas Korpisalo in this game for the Columbus Blue Jackets, and it just continues to go wrong for this team. They played well in Winnipeg the other night, still lost that game. Again, a late goal really crushed them. And to continue on into this one, Ryan O'Reilly kicks off the scoring, his 19th. Carl Gunnarsson his third. It was 2-0 St. Louis all the way into the third. Finally, the Jackets had some life. Oliver Bjorkstrand, his 9th from Artemi Panarin, made it a one-goal game. But that's as close as Columbus would get in this game, because a guy we've been talking about for a month and a half or so, a true candidate to have a strong second half. Well, he's gone according to script thus far.
Now Shen to O'Reilly, wide open. The drive, rebound, they score! Tarasenko gets it into the empty net, and the Blues get it right back and lead 3-1.
John Kelly, The Call, Rogers NHL Live and Fox Sports Midwest. Vlad the Impaler now up to 18 on the year from O'Reilly and Shen. Dubois would score his 19th, then Sundqvist ices it, his 11th. Empty netter. Blues win again, 4-2 the final. That's five losses in regulation in a row for the Columbus Blue Jackets. What do you make of that whole situation?
Well, John Tortorella was asked about the pressures of the trade deadline and just having Panarin and Bobrovsky in that room. Their next game is on Tuesday in Colorado, and he mentioned that I've already scheduled a team meeting once they get there. They need to figure this out. He said something along the lines of they need to step up and be men facing this situation. And it must be tough. I mean, like you said earlier in the show, these are human beings. They are businessmen and they understand that, but there is a human aspect to what's going on here. And I'm also interested in the goalie splits here. Since that sit-down that Bobrovsky had, Korpisalo has played one more game than Bobrovsky has, and Bobrovsky has been 1-3-0 with 16 goals against since that suspension. Korpisalo has been 3-2-0 with 11 goals against, clearly the better guy. I'm just curious, these next three games on the road, in Colorado on Tuesday, in Arizona on Thursday, in Vegas on Saturday, what's that split? Like, who gets the Colorado and Vegas games? Is that Korpisalo? And does Bobrovsky get the potentially easier one against Arizona? You know, I just want to see how they're used, because since then, it has been a little bit more Korpisalo. It's a split, but it's been going Korpisalo's way, and he's been the better goalie.
Dare I say they could be showing their hand in potentially down the road in how they feel. Like, if they think Korpisalo could be the guy, yeah, maybe they're showing their hand in Bobrovsky. Something certainly to monitor going forward. That's Rory Boylan. I'm Nick Alberga here on Hockey Central Saturday across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Couple more games to cover. Next, we go to Sunrise, the Florida Panthers. The debuts of Derek Brassard and Riley Sheahan after that big trade with Pittsburgh on Friday against the suddenly slumping Vegas Golden Knights. And the two teams exchanged goals in the first period. Sasha Barkov, his 18th. Max Pacioretty, his 16th. 1-1. All the way into the third period, the eventual winner comes from the Derek Brassard line.
With a steal, Hoffman with a lane to the net. On a forehand, he scores! Mike Hoffman for his team-leading 24th to give Florida the lead.
There's Dave Gosher, the TV call for the Vegas Golden Knights, but it's Mike Hoffman scoring his 24th. Pretty much as advertised, I would say, so far with the Panthers. From Derek Brassard, the only assist, 2-1. And the red-hot Frank Vatrano would ice it, a 3-1 final. Vegas has now dropped four in a row, and I believe five of the last seven. It's too early to say something is happening there in Vegas, but They've hit a little blip on the radar so far, and the Panthers won again. They've been hot since Trocheck came back.
Vegas is so desperate that Valentin Zhukov played a season-high 17 minutes and 32 seconds tonight. Three shots on goal. I can't be too worried about Vegas. I do think, though, and I've said it before, now is the time. Sit Marc-Andre Fleury, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. He's got to have some more rest. I know they just got off of a bye week and All-Star break and all that stuff, but the games are going to pick up here down the stretch, and he's played a ton to this point in the season. They got to lay off the gas there with him and make sure that he's rested to the playoffs, because they are going to get there, and I think they're definitely going to be one of these buyers around the trade deadline. Could do a couple of big things. They got some salary cap space there. I'm not worried about Vegas, but I think there are some things that they have to do to make sure this thing doesn't start going off the rails.
Yeah, we missed the Brandon Peary revenge game as well, a minus one. He has a variety of revenge games around the NHL. I think you're right, but they have Maxime Lagacé, and I don't know how much faith they have in him with Subban on the shelf right now. We move along, two more games to cover. The site of the Bridgestone Winter Classic coming up next year, of course. I don't even know if that's the right sponsor anymore. I'll double check on that. Bridgestone Arena is what I was trying to get out. Nashville home to Dallas. Still get together at Cotton Bowl Stadium next year. A good hockey game at that, and a potential battle of a first-round matchup here. Cali Yarncroc scores his ninth to make it a 1-0 Predators lead. Then Tyler Seguin responds his 21st from Radulov and Lindell. 11-11 of the first period. It was 1-1 after 20 in the third period. Nothing cooking in the second. Here's the eventual game winner and the turning point in this hockey game.
Odd angle shot. Tried to sweep it past Hudobin, who made the save. Rene lets it bounce. Foxa pushed by Ellis into the circle. Tipped in front. Como scores!
Willie Donick, the call on Fox Sports Tennessee. That's the eventual winner. How about Dallas? Four wins in a row. Blake Como, six. Matthias Janmark scored shortly after that as well. Quick response. Janmark's fourth. And Dallas goes on the road in Nashville. This showed me a little something-something, if you know what I'm saying.
Yep.
A 3-1 win against the Predators. So Dallas getting cooking here.
Nashville starting to get healthy, too. Really, the big piece that they're still missing is Kyle Turris, their second-line center there. But the Stars starting to create a little bit of space maybe between them. I mean, they're in the playoffs by 6 points now, so that's mm-hmm. a lot. That's just as far behind Nashville as they are in the standings, and they have two games in hand of the Predators too.
Wow.
That would be something. I mean, but Nashville, they haven't been particularly great here for a while now, and I think part of that is injuries. A big part of that
they're
is
like
injuries.
They're like Toronto of the West right now.
But except that Pekka Rinne has been very pedestrian
Suspect.
Here for 2 months or so,
yeah.
And that's a little bit worrying. Saros has been okay, but I this is going to be a big adder at the deadline is Nashville, and I think Dallas clearly is. That's the message from the very top, and Jim Neal has got to be a motivated buyer because you don't know what the future of his job is going to be there. They got to add some more depth. But a very interesting, I agree with you, a very strong showing for Dallas. It got a little chippy out there at times in this game. Potential playoff series, and Dallas showed really well. But the big problem with them is how are they going to show up next game? Are they going to be there, or are they going to lay another egg?
They're consistently inconsistent. I like to speak of Jim Neal's squad and Jim Montgomery's squad. The All Jims team, we like
yes.
to call it, which brings us to our final stop of the night, SAP Center. The Red Hot Arizona Coyotes, again, really solid game for them. Darcy Kemper included 32 saves. Connor Garland kicked off the scoring, this time not with his face, his 10th unassisted. Kevin LeBanc responds with his 6th. Joe Pavelski's 28th at 12:53 into the third, where former Penn Josh Archibald would tie it up, his 5th at 7:10, sending this game off to OT. And what a beautiful winner here from the San Jose Sharks.
Burns across center, into the zone, and his pass out of the reach of Hurdle, and he's got it now. Burns facing the net. Burns deeps. Burns scores! What a goal! Brent Burns! And the Sharks win it in overtime!
That's what happens sometimes when you get to 3-on-3. Randy Hahn, the call, courtesy of Rogers NHL Live. Brent Burns, what a finish there and a tuck. His 10th from Hurdle, and San Jose takes care of business. They needed the victory here. They got the job done, although they surrendered a point to Arizona in the long run. It probably won't matter.
No.
But San Jose takes a 3-2.
Yeah, I mean, this is a statement win a bit for the Sharks. You're missing Erik Karlsson. You didn't want to lose a game against a team that you don't think Arizona is really going to give you a lot of push, but they have been playing really well lately. I was wondering if Oliver Ekman-Larsson was going to play in this game for the Coyotes, and he did, mm-hmm. and he played 26 minutes and 30 seconds.
Okay.
So I guess he's just fine.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you saw some of the depth guys here for San Jose tonight that are a reason why they're so good. Like Kevin LeBanc scores. Joe Thornton hasn't been himself this year, but he got a primary assist here. And then on Pavelski's goal, the guy who did most of the work on that one was Timo Meier. He's had a really fantastic breakout season. And then the overtime winner, Brent Burns, he's going to be a guy right in that Norris Trophy discussion. Mm-hmm. I thought Erik Karlsson might even slip in there, but this injury might slow him down and take him out.
He was garbage for like half a year. So
yeah, but when he started going,
he
was really, really going strong. And I even think when the points weren't coming for him, he wasn't really playing terribly. Mm-hmm. He was playing well enough that you could see something better was coming for him.
The victors once again, 13 games on Saturday. Philadelphia, the New Jersey Devils, Winnipeg all over Anaheim, 9-3. Toronto, Detroit, your Florida Panthers, the Islanders, St. Louis Blues, the Tampa Bay Lightning, again, they always win. Dallas, Chicago, Vancouver, all over Colorado, a statement victory there. And as you heard there, San Jose over Arizona. Rory, great job. We'll talk next week.
Enjoy
sleeping. No, we won't actually.
Enjoy sleeping through the Super Bowl.
I will.
You're not here next week.
I won't be here next week. I got the Patriots. Who do you have?
I'm not betting against the Patriots, man.
There you have it. Take care.